Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
We are back with the death lineup. We've been missing for a couple weeks here, and this will be our last show for 2024 just because of the Christmas holiday. But we're here before the end of the year, and lots of stuff has happened in Valkyries and Warriors land. So let's just kick it off and let's go to the whiteboard. The Warriors have traded for Dennis Schroeder. What are your thoughts?
I think it's clear that a change needed to be made. And I think for the price they got him feels very cheap in comparison to him being, not in comparison, but just around kind of looking at it from afar, is that he's an expiring contract. And he's been playing really well to start the season. And I'm surprised there wasn't a better offer out there. I was actually listening to Plus Minus today about that breaking news podcast they did, the Emergency Pod. And I think Kawakami was kind of saying, like, well, like, you look at the Warriors competitors and they're so, like, you know, they have too many riches, like the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, they didn't need him. The Houston Rockets, they didn't need him. And the Los Angeles Lakers doesn't seem like they could have gotten him without giving up someone like substantial. Like, the Warriors just kind of had this contract sitting there that they weren't going to use this season because he was injured, and they used it. And I do agree, like, for some context, I was actually in Yosemite during a snowstorm with zero power when this thing happened. I didn't have power from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Saturday. So I think the trade happened about 3 hours before I retained power. And one of my first thoughts was, I was happy, good thoughts. But I think just being the trade machine guy I was, I knew that that Melton contract was very important to orchestrating any type of bigger contract trade, just because I've been in the mix and fanspo.com is like the main trade machine website. And I knew that that contract, once available to trade, you know, a week or two ago, I think it was finally available to trade, was going to be an important one. And they used it right away. And now I think Dennis Schroeder in return is going to be really good. You've taken yourself out of any probably big contract consideration. Now, I'm sure you can move around some numbers to make it happen, but that one was
Wiggs
just
now. It's just Wiggs. Like, you have to trade Wiggs in any big deal now without this Melton. And you may have had to trade Wiggs anyways.
If you wanted an insane one, you know, like, you're talking superstar level, yeah, Wiggs had to go regardless. But, you know, you talk about some of these players making smaller money, like, yeah, you didn't have to go.
That trade for Schroeder is, I don't know, man, the Joe Lacob conversation in the summer about Pajemski, I don't know if it's too much pressure on him or thrusting him into a bigger role this year was too much for him. I know he worked on a lot of things in the summer, but I don't see any improvement in his game necessarily. I see more a reluctance than the kind of the never scared Pajemski that we saw last year, just doing wild stuff on the court. And this is what happens with second year players. And we've said this before, which is, when you're a rookie, there's not a lot of tape on you. And so you go out there and you put together a resume, but also what you're doing is you're putting together tape for the opposition. And it's clear that there's deficiencies in his game that the other teams are looking to exploit. And we saw it in Dallas, right? Gets the ball swung to the corner. If he believes in his three-pointer, he immediately gets the shot up. Instead, he tries to do the goofy Chris Mullin stuff in the corner with the dribbling, and then Luka essentially blocks his shot or stops him from shooting, and the 24 shot clock expires. So it's like the cutesy stuff, which worked last year, they know it now. They can see it. Like they know what to expect when they have to go out and defend him. And that is the thing that they're going to have to figure out. Now, I compare him to Chris Mullin because I saw Chris Mullin's entire career. And when Chris Mullin, not until Chris Mullin really became a cardio machine, did his game improve. Like, he could always shoot, but he was always slow and he was exploited defensively. He changed his body. He changed his training and he became a much better player. He was never the greatest defender. He was never going to blow by anybody, but he had the outside shot so that he could play off of that. And I think Pods needs to do something to make him stand out because of the skill sets that he has. Nothing is what you look for in quality NBA players, right? Like, he's got great footwork. If he was 6'10", that footwork is amazing, and it would get him buckets over buckets over buckets. When he's 6'3 or 6'4, not necessarily. His handle isn't sharp. His he doesn't have great speed. Defensively, he cheats, and when he takes charges, it looks great. But then when he gives up open threes because he's trying to find the charge, it's not so great. So this is not me saying Pajemski sucks in any way. I just don't know if he was ready to be your number two guard in the starting backcourt. And Schroeder should be an improvement for that for sure.
Yeah, I think my, you know, after season one outlook on Pajemski was that I think that his peak, the best he can be, is a starting level point guard. And I think that starting level point guards in today's NBA gives you a bad idea, or maybe too much of, like, you think of starting NBA point guards and they're like all-stars, like all 31, 32 of them have like all-star potential or are all-stars. Like, the point guard is such a deep position in the NBA. So when I'm saying like starting level point guard, I'm thinking of like when the point guard wasn't the primary position, like he's like a Derek Fisher. I don't even know. I don't want to talk trash Derek Fisher. I didn't watch him that much, but was he ever an all-star?
Derek, like, Fisher maybe had Kobe. Yeah, I think he may have made an all-star team, but it's because he was on the Lakers more than anything else.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking like a starting level guard of a guy who maybe makes the all-star once in his career, but is just like good for his entire career. That's kind of what I was expecting from him. And I don't think year two, you know, you said it, you put tape, he's kind of like, I punch you in my rookie season, and then year two, you get to punch back. And then now it's my turn to punch again. And we'll see how Pajemski responds to that. But I just don't think, I thought this year, at the very least, he could be the backup one and we'd feel really good about that. I don't think he's there yet. And I think that last season, you know, he had Steph and then he had Chris Paul, two of probably the greatest point guards of this era. Mm-hmm. And I know Chris Paul wasn't the Chris Paul, but he was still pretty good last year. And this year it's kind of had to be like a mix of him and, you know, Melton maybe while he was here for the first few games, but really it's just been like him, Steph and Draymond. And so I think maybe with the addition of Schroeder, we can go back to, like, you know, Steph and, you know, the plus minus guys weren't sure if Schroeder would start right away. I feel like he should. I feel like it should be Steph and Schroeder to start. And I think Pajemski should be one of the first subs for Schroeder. And then Schroeder should then sub in for Steph when it's Steph's time to go out. So you can kind of have like a split thing with both of them. And yeah, I think Pajemski, maybe we'll see him settle back and being more confident when he doesn't have all this maybe primary ball handler pressure. But as you know, I've been behind in Warriors land lately. Mm-hmm. And for context, today I watched the Oklahoma City Thunder game when Stephen Curry was out. I thought Pajemski was pretty damn good in that game.
How long ago was that?
That was November 27th. I've seen games here and there. I saw Phoenix. Like, I just like to watch them in order. It's like a book. I'm like skipping chapters. But I watched the Phoenix game, and that's ahead of this game. And I also watched the Houston one, the knockout round one, live. Mm-hmm. So I have seen some Warriors basketball, but I normally try to watch it, like, you know, in order. And I thought Pajemski was pretty dang good against Oklahoma City Thunder without Steph. Now the three-point shot is like kind of hit or miss, but he's still doing good things. And I think that's
miss
on the floor.
He's like 20% or something. So it really is miss. Like if he was hitting 33%, I don't think it would be as big of an issue, because when you're at 33%, you know, you get hot, you make 4 out of 10, you know, over the next week, and then you do it again. Like you can climb, but to get out to where he is now, to get out of that hole, and with the lack of confidence, I think it is a problem. It's not a small thing. I think that is the trick to getting him back into things, is the confidence in that shot. Like, you know, when you're taught how to shoot basketball, you're always taught follow through, follow through, follow through. Mm-hmm. And then certain shooters, I think like Carmelo Anthony would shoot, and then he would absolutely not follow through. He would pull his hands back. Like Pods does that. Like Pods pulls both of his hands back after a shot. And I was like, I wonder if his shot would be better if he just would follow through. I don't understand why he's doing that now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, so you thought Pods was good in that game. I don't think he's been.
I did, and I think I texted you the Houston game too, when I feel like he was kind of getting dumped on. I was like, I just watched that live. I thought he was like kind of fine. I think he's just maybe getting put in some spots that like he's not necessarily, he's not supposed to be a ball stopper. Yet they had him on Jalen Green, and Jalen Green cooked him. Like mm-hmm. he's not a ball stopper, and so I get that if you're watching it and you're just being like, he's failing at the positions they're putting him in, we're gonna trash him. I get it. I just think that. Yeah, maybe sometimes they're asking too much of him. I'm also not going to be here and standing on like this Pods wagon of like, he's amazing. I don't think so. I think he's, like you kind of mentioned, like he's kind of average at a lot of things, and maybe his best trait is like rebounding. But I just don't think that he's been as terrible. Now, I didn't watch the Mavericks game. I saw that clip replayed over and over again. It looked like he was trying to do that Clay sidestep thing, and it's like, why are you trying to do the Clay sidestep thing? You don't have that in your bag, and clearly you were slow at doing it, and that's what allowed Chubby Luka to catch up to you and actually make that dip. Like, that was insane. But it's I don't think he has been absolutely terrible. I think sometimes in Warriors land, we just decide to jump on a guy
mm-hmm.
because, you know, there's someone sitting, and it's usually Moses Moody that's sitting behind him, not getting minutes, that, you know, we think Moses should be getting minutes. Therefore, we're going to trash the guy who's playing ahead of him.
I think Pajemski's real issue is Kerr's faith in him. I think that's to Warriors fans, the fact that Kerr really believes in him is what really irritates Warriors fans, because they didn't see that same level of faith in Kuminga or Moody
or Moses. Yeah, exactly. That's what it is, man. I have a friend, exactly, Eric. Yeah, that's exactly his belief in this stuff. That's why he absolutely hates Anthony Lamb. You know, I hated Anthony Lamb too, but not to that extent of just I cannot watch this guy play a second of basketball.
Lamb still in the league?
No, he must be playing overseas or something, because he didn't touch an NBA court after the Warriors. I kind of feel like Lindy Waters is getting a little bit of that treatment for my liking. I'm like, gosh, like you have negative finishing. Like mm-hmm. you cannot, like, I do not trust you when you have the ball in your hand and you're like looking like you might, you know, do something other than take a three. Like I think it's bad. And if you're not making the three, I'm just like, what are you good for? And yeah.
The other thing, I think the reason why Kerr goes to Lindy Waters a little bit is because there is a little bit of like a heat check kind of thing with him, where he does not have shaky confidence in his shot. Like, he just continues shooting even when he's not making it. And he made a lot more in the beginning of the season. Buddy Hield, right? Like, Buddy Hield is the best example of that, where he just is going to keep shooting. And some nights he's going to miss. He's going to go for 6, and other nights he's going to go like 6 for 10, and you just got to live with it. The last thing about Schroeder, and we'll move on, which is I think he's going to be able to also help them get twos, which Pajemski should be better at. Like, he's got like a mid range, and he's got, like we said, the footwork, but it's also not as consistent as you'd want it to be. He goes up sometimes looking not to finish, and almost goes up to then pass it off. And we just need someone who can like finish, and Schroeder is going to be kind of fearless in that way. And hopefully maybe even get to the foul line because that is another thing that the Warriors do not do with all the three-pointers that they shoot. So I think it's like you tested something, you had an experiment in the first half of these first 25 games or whatever it's been, it worked. And in the second half, you lose Melton. I don't think it's all of the Melton loss, but guys became who they kind of are in some scenarios, and they didn't play as well. So they did need to make a change or risk being last year's team. And they may very well still be last year's team, by the way. They are, I think they're like, what are they, 14-11 right now or something like that? Are they, 14-11. God. So they're right in the 6-7-8 range right now when it comes to the playoffs.
I was so hesitant on this team and this hot start. And I told you, I said, they will not convince me until they get a number two. And I stood by that for so long, even into this season when they had an amazing record. And at some point I was just like, they're figuring it out. Like at the very least, I don't think they drop below the sixth seed. Like I finally gave in. And then it was so clear after I said that they were terrible. It was kind of just last year. It was like, they were in all of these games, but they couldn't close it. Like that's what it was. And I sometimes feel like, if you look at like a lot of these halftime scores, I feel like they're behind. It feels like they really just kind of, it's like they play this style and it's like reliant on like teams, you know, maybe messing up here and there. They can go on a run and like, you know, their subs come in and then we're still retaining our style of play and it's able to beat the subs. And in Houston's case, we were better when their starters were on the floor and we're worse when Amen Thompson and Tari Eason were out there on the bench. But yeah, I think the Schroeder thing, like, we needed him. I still think we need someone. I'm just going to put my foot down and just go back to what I believe in. And it's that Schroeder's going to be great, but he's not a number two.
He's not even a shooting guard. He's smaller than Steph. They have a tiny
6'1", right?
Yeah.
I've seen some really positive things from JK that makes me think that he is on the right trajectory to have like that leap. I don't think it's like the leaps we wanted to see per se, like a Tyrese Maxey leap or like a, you know, like a Ja Morant leap. It's kind of just like a more of a muted like star leap. But I still think that I've seen some good things from him. It feels like he really doesn't do that like midi turnaround thing anymore as much as he used to last year. Last year felt a little automatic.
His mid range. There was a stat up the other day where he was like 30% in the mid range or something like that. The fadeaway is the one that looks like it's working, but it's just when he takes a normal jump shot that is not a three or a dunk, that's what he misses. But for whatever reason, the fadeaway is the one that looks pretty good. So
it's always been the fadeaway last year too. But I was watching that Thunder game, he shot two threes right away that I'm like, dude, you weren't even really open. And Bob Myers starts to go like, that's not really where the Warriors want him to shoot it. And then Kuminga goes to hit like three in a row, like for on his own shooting, not in the game three in a row, but just he hits his next three shots and they're all from three. So, and again, I saw that Houston game. I think he made one or two, but I think there's something. I think the move for Draymond to the bench makes sense just because they play the same position. And this is probably a podcast we should have had when that last week or two to talk about that.
But. And Draymond has had to start at the five because if he doesn't, like you said, he comes off the bench. But if they feel like this is not a loony game, then it just puts Draymond back at the five to start the game instead of just closing the game with him. So, they have some interesting pieces that sometimes fit really well against certain teams and then sometimes just do not fit at all against other teams. So, I don't know. This is a little bit of a puzzle for Dunleavy to put together. And, you know, the same names are going to be out there, right? Zach LaVine, Jimmy Butler, the normal names that we were hearing all offseason. And I don't know, you know, 3 months later, do those guys look any better than they did when we first said, I'm not sure about those guys? Probably not. So
there, I think
that out.
There's a chance, though, that the number two you go and get doesn't have to be this like high stakes, like NBA All-Star. And I say that to say, What are your thoughts on Vucevic?
I think Vucevic is, who would I compare him to? Now, if he can hit the, I don't know what his 3-point percentage is this year, but if he's hitting the three consistently, that's better than if he's not. He's like empty calories to me, though. You know, what, like, and this is not entirely his fault because he played on a young Magic team and then he got traded to a Bulls team that has generally not been good. But he's like a 20 and 10 guy in a day where he does his damage is kind of harmless. Now, I know that's the newest name on the board for the Warriors. I remember when the Magic traded for him and they got Wendell Carter back, I was like, oh, I actually like Wendell Carter like way better as a player just because he could do more things. And then Wendell Carter is often injured, so he didn't really make the leap that I thought he would make. But you know, Vucevic is consistently, I don't know what his averages are, but he just feels like a 20 and 10 guy, like every game. But again, does he get played off the court in the fourth quarter? Like that is my biggest issue with these centers who can't really get out to the perimeter. Not everybody can, you know, and that's why centers are kind of played off the court in the fourth quarter. Like same with Valanciunas, right? Like that guy just going to get played out off the court when the game's on the line. So I don't know what do you like, are his numbers any different this year than they've been?
Okay, it's been, thanks to my cruddy Wi-Fi, it's been the toughest thing just to navigate to Basketball Reference. So I'm on ESPN right now, and I do see some nice things. Mm-hmm. 3-point percentage is at 47.5, and it looks he's actually taking some attempts.
And that works.
Like 2 to 4? Is that even, I've never seen a 3-point attempt stat look like this. It's like a range of numbers.
That totally works, but last year he was at 29%. So how is that sustainable? Probably not. His best year prior to this year
40
was, and that was, I think that was that the pandemic season or the season after the pandemic, I think. No, or that might've been the pandemic season. I don't remember. I
think that is the season after.
Okay.
That's the Warriors.
So yeah, he had 40 in 44 games with the Magic. Then he got traded to the Bulls and he kept it high at 38.8, but then went to 31, 35, 29, and now he's up to 47. So, yeah, I mean, if he could shoot like that, he's very clearly going to help a team like the Warriors, because then you could play Draymond.
I don't know what it would take to get him. I don't think it would take that much, but I'm assuming maybe that Melton contract would have helped a lot to make something like that happen without giving up anything substantial. The cool thing about Fanspo is that it gives you like the trending players being traded right now. And you could just see like what fan base is like so scared right now, because the top two are Denver Nuggets. It's Michael Porter Jr. and Zeke Nnaji that are being like put in mock trades the most, which means Denver Nuggets fans are just trying to see if they can add someone to their team. Then it's Zach LaVine, Cam Johnson, D'Angelo Russell, Jimmy, Dorian Finney-Smith, Gabe Vincent, Zion Williamson, Jonas Valanciunas. And then Dario Saric, Jalen Hood-Schifino. So, yeah.
So, the good thing about him is his contract for this year is only 20, and his contract for next year is only 21. So, it's not like
you could probably
$35 million.
Like Looney
or
and like
million.
Kyle Anderson.
Yeah, it could be something like that. And that's if they're looking to get rid of a guy for some expire. Kyle Anderson on a 1-year deal, and so is Looney.
I believe so.
Is that right? Yeah. So that would be, I mean, that would be an interesting trade. I mean, the Warriors would be trading pieces that aren't currently working for a piece that could work. And, you know, then, you know, they have all of their draft picks and such too. So they, you know, they could finagle things like that. But like what you said was, you know, the Melton contract, and I think they got one draft pick extra from the Warriors, and then
the Warriors sent 2 seconds, and then the Nets sent 1 second. So
and Reese Balkman, the two-way,
Reese Beckman or Beekman or whatever.
Yeah.
His name is.
He also went in the deal. Poor guy. So.
Drinking and driving is a decision that could change your whole world. Things will never be the same if you ever get a DUI. Because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way that your world can be turned upside down. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You can face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one that can face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive can permanently impact not just your world, but someone else's world as well. Whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
All right, so the rest of this this week and next week for the Warriors, as far as the NBA schedule is concerned. So Warriors play Memphis on Thursday, and
good luck.
Well, you know, the thing about this division is everybody is at 500 or only one game under 500, which is the Kings. They're 13-14, except for the tankers, which are the Blazers, the Jazz, and the Pelicans. Well, Pelicans aren't trying to tank. They just can't keep anybody healthy. But everyone else, so that's the top 12, they're all in the mix for the top six, right? So the Grizzlies are 18-9 right now. The Grizzlies are actually second behind the Thunder. And so that's just what the season is going to be. Is the season is going to be being around 5, 6, 7, 8? The whole is just going to be like last year. That's what this season is going to be. So I don't think that they're going to be able to distance themselves in any way unless they do make a big move. But you know, I'm actually thankful that they got off to that little bit of a hot streak, because if they didn't, they would probably be below the Kings right now.
Yeah, they would.
Okay, so for the rest of the schedule, we have the Timberwolves again on Saturday. That is in Minnesota. This game on Thursday is actually in Memphis too. Memphis is 12-3 at home this year. And then the 23rd, the Pacers are here. And then the 25th, the Christmas game, Lakers and Warriors. That is the main event Christmas game. The primetime game, Steph and LeBron, they're getting a lot of mileage out of the end of this Steph and LeBron series. I mean, two teams that if you're looking at the schedule, Warriors are 14-11. They're currently tied for sixth. The Lakers 14-12, currently in 10th. So it's not like these teams are in any kind of mix for top spots in the West. So it's just trying to get the last vestige of LeBron and Steph.
And then Clippers, Suns, Cavs to end the year. Cavs coming to Chase Center on the 30th. So there's some good games. The Suns and the Warriors. The Suns kind of play the Warriors better than most teams. The Cavs wiped the floor with the Warriors before. The Warriors always struggle with the Clippers. The Lakers can give them problems if AD is on his game. So these are going to be a tough series to end the year. We might be lucky if we're still around 500 by the time 2025 turns. So does this Christmas thing even mean anything anymore to you? Like, the NFL is taking up the schedule. They have games on Christmas this year. Like, what does Christmas NBA mean?
Feels less important. I feel like there's been just a lot of talk around the league that feels like the NBA is a less marketable product right now, or just like the hype isn't there as it feels like it has been in years past. Like, there's just something up with it. I think ever since they took away the Christmas jerseys, I've kind of haven't loved it as much.
Christmas jerseys were fun.
They were fun. And then
the shoes and everyone's different Christmas shoe and everything.
The NFL doesn't have Christmas, in my opinion. Like, I still think it's the NBA's holiday, but that's just because I don't really watch the NFL that much. So those bad guys.
Yeah, they have the Netflix games, which are going to be pretty interesting. So, all right. So let's talk about the Valkyries.
Valks Valley.
I want to say we got my top two players that I talked about. Got Killa Kate Martin and Temi Fagbenley. Those were the two that I kind of circled, and you were telling me that they weren't going to be able to get Fagbenley.
Really didn't think so. I think it's very surprising that she was not protected, considering she was like the most impactful big for the first like 12 games of their cruddy season last year. Like, she was the one who could figure it out with Caitlin, because she just ran up and down the floor. She was like a super athlete. So I'm just surprised that they let her walk. Not let her walk. They just didn't protect her. Like, I want to see who that sixth protection was for them, because the first five made sense with the starting five, but who was the sixth protection? That's why I wish they came out with this stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. Do you have the list, or do you want me to read it?
Yeah, you can go through the ones that kind of stood out to you, because those were the ones that stood out to me.
Only 11 of them, or 12. It's only 11 of them. So Monique Billings was the one that they used their only unrestricted free agent selection with, and it's not even confirmed if they're going to core her yet. So it's kind of like that thing I was saying to a different extent on the Richard Cohen pod, where it's like, can you do it and just not do it?
Yeah.
And he was saying that with players like who had been cored twice, like, no, you just, it's just like a, there's not a rule stating that you can't, but you don't and you can't. But it kind of seems like with this selection, they still might not give her the core designation, even though they picked her as the only core pick. So, or as the only unrestricted free agent pick. So we'll see with that. I did like Monique Billings for, you know, half of the season with Phoenix last year. And then Veronica Burton is the one I had circled from Connecticut that Richard picked. I thought that it was very possible that we'd get her, because I watched that playoff series and I thought she was impactful. And then we start to get the players that I really just don't know really anything about. Maria Conde. I feel like it was mentioned that she's like not been in the W yet or something like that.
They drafted a few international players that may just never come play for the team. They were like,
I will say that they do have, like, is it their like senior VP Vanya or something, that she is from
London or something, right?
Of course, London. She was like the GM for like the London Lions that Temi Fagbenley was on. Like, it sounds like this seems, and I'll keep reading the roster, but what you'll notice is a very heavy international player selection here. And it's, I think maybe the idea is they can convince some of these players, given that they have some, I guess, Vanya really just in the front office here. It seems like Ohema's a traveler too. I don't know if she's kind of been overseas for basketball. I don't really know her resume that much outside of the New York Liberty.
Ask her if we get a chance to talk to her on Friday.
True, we should talk about that. Okay, next, Temi Fagbenley with the Fever. She's a good player. It's just, I feel like I was a little confused with the direction. I feel like I kind of see the direction. I'm a little worried about the direction. How about that?
Well,
Carla Leite.
What we had talked about was, do they just draft younger players because then they have their contract for a few years? And when you're drafting these older players, everyone's contract's going to expire after next year. So everyone becomes a free agent. And maybe that's what
Lacob wants is just like, we're going to go get like two or three of the best players and we don't want our spots locked up. Like maybe that's the strategy, but at the same time, you know, it did seem like maybe the strategy from the other teams was to do exactly what we were telling the Valkyries to do, which is try and get some of these younger players. Maybe they locked up their players with the rookie contracts.
Yeah, no, that's very possible. I'm very surprised. And now things could still happen. I'm very surprised there were zero trades in the expansion draft. I was a little like, that's the part I was kind of excited for, was the GM chess match of who's going to protect who, but also the trades that could potentially happen. And I thought, you know, Ohemo would be I thought we'd see at least two to three trades, just given that we got a player like Kayla Thornton that we could potentially flip to another team. And look, that's something like that's still available. We haven't hit free agency yet. Kayla could still be traded. She's a great player, but I think that she's not as useful for us right now as she would be for Las Vegas, Seattle.
The WNBA draft isn't for like another 4 months. So
like March or April or something.
Yeah, lots of stuff can happen right around that time too.
I'll skip around a little. Carla Late, I believe that's how you pronounce it. I think she's a French guard. I recognize her name because she was drafted last year by Dallas, but she wasn't protected. And it seemed like that was kind of the pick that a lot of people were like, whoa, how do you just let that person slip and go to the Valkyries? So I'm excited for her. I think, again, 20-year-old French guard. I followed her on Instagram, so I'm seeing like clips she's posting. She looks pretty good. I want to do more research. But then Kate Martin, of course. Everyone knows who Kate Martin is. And then Ileana Rupaire. She is, if you follow the NBA, she's Ryan Rupaire's sister. Ryan Rupaire was drafted last year by the Portland Trailblazers. I'm not too familiar with her career. And then Stephanie Talbot from the Sparks. She was good for a little bit, but then Azura Stevens kind of found her way and took her spot from the starting lineup. Kayla Thornton, of course, New York Liberty champion. Julie Van Loo is someone who a lot of the people from what I was looking at from a social media perspective were confused why the Valkyries took this player over maybe some of the players that were available, like Haley Jones, even though that was kind of who I would have picked. But I know that there were some other players that people were not sure about. And then Cecilia Zandalosini, she has like one of the best 3-point shots I feel like I've ever seen. But it's again, just like, do we need like JJ Redick if we're like the worst team in the league? I just think, so I guess looking at this, taking a step back here, it feels like, you know, what Natalie Nakase kept saying, what Ohemo kept saying, is just like, we want players who can run and shoot threes and play defense. Like, you just want like, they just want like 3-and-D role players, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so yes, that's good. But like, so then what I guess my interest now is like, okay, you kind of went all, you know, high floor, low ceiling type of players. And I understand that it's kind of hard to maybe get a home run swing in an expansion draft. But now I'm wondering like, okay, so who are you going to want in this upcoming draft where there's like there's maybe a 5 to 10% chance that someone like Kiki Iriafen slips to them at 5, but like, would they even want her? She doesn't shoot threes. She has potential to be a good defender, but I feel like she's not there yet. And it's like, would you pass up on her for someone like a, you know, like a Sonia Citron who's on Notre Dame and she's kind of like been their 3-and-D. She's awesome. I would love for her to be on this team, but kind of 3-and-D, not as high of a ceiling. Like, I'm wondering what they're going to do with the draft, given their statements here. Like, are you going to try to, this is a question I actually want to ask Ohemo if we have the opportunity to on Friday, is I think you can agree that you did not find a best player on a championship team in this expansion draft, nor was it expected that you would. However, I'm interested, would you be looking to find that player in the draft or in free agency? Would you look to, you know, take that swing in the draft, or do you think that you will follow your model of a 3-and-D kind of hustle player formula and take that into the draft with you and then find that number one in free agency? Or do you think you might be looking to take a swing in the draft? Like, that's something, and I of course know that it's going to be some very political answer. You're not really going to get anything out of that question.
Well, you heard how she answered the Athletic women's basketball podcast folks. She was like,
she wasn't giving nothing.
Yeah, she wasn't giving it. But by the way, you know, I think Natalie Nakase is going to be an absolute star in the Bay Area.
I think so too. She's very energetic and she's fun to listen to.
Very energetic. She's got great answers.
Mm-hmm.
I know she's like, when she's like, oh yeah, like Baron Davis and I, we went to school together. It's like, yeah, so you got Baron Davis in your phone. Like, that's really cool. Like, you know, like just that kind of stuff where she just seems like people like her, and she just seems like a basketball head, which I think is going to go over really well with the Bay Area. So I'm excited just for her, like more like, you know, maybe they put Kate Martin on the poster or whatever for now until whomever they draft in the college draft. But for now, I think Natalie's the star. She's the person who, you know, you kind of put on the billboards and stuff, because I think she's got something going on with her personality that will really, really be appreciated in this area.
In the draft, because they still got, like, there's still stars in the draft who, like, aren't the best players, like a Haley Van Lith or Lith. Like, I know if we got her, she'd be on posters.
Yeah.
AZ Fudd, I think she'd be on posters too, but she's, you know. So, yeah,
did
I'm with
you. Hurt again?
She did, and it was very tough to see because she was cooking. She was absolutely destroying Louisville, and it was
Is it a long-term injury or?
I don't know. I actually don't know. It doesn't sound like it from what, like, I think there would be a lot of uproar if it was like AZ Fudd's out for the season. I would have seen that, and I didn't see that. So, dude, she was really good against Louisville. Taking, like, her 3-point shot, a lot of people say is like the best, you know, how people say like Steph Curry's the greatest shooter, but Klay Thompson has the best form. Like, it's kind of, it feels like that with like AZ Fudd's got that form, like just the perfect form. And she hit so many 3-pointers. Anyways. Yeah. I mean, a lot of Valkyrie news with the expansion draft, the secondary logo. You know, we could talk about, you know, quickly on Friday, what we're up to.
Yeah. The Invisalign Bay Area Classic. The Lady Cardinal, Stanford Cardinal, UCLA, Creighton, and what's the fourth team that I'm forgetting?
Ohio State.
So all the women's programs are going to play back-to-back at Chase. And did we get tickets? Are we getting tickets? What is the story?
We have, like, damn near courtside tickets. Okay. I think we're, like, row 9.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. I think we're like row 9. I think we're like behind a basket as opposed to being like on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
I think, but yeah, we're really close. So we get to see the number one team, UCLA, right now.
Are they number one? Wow.
They're number one. They beat South Carolina, the undefeated team, a couple weeks back, and they've been number one and they've held that spot. Again, they haven't really had that many tough matchups, and they're not going to have one. I don't think Creighton's ranked by any. That's who they're playing, and I don't think they're ranked. So it doesn't. They're just, I mean, we get to see Lauren Betts, you know, the 6'7" player who's like the offensive hub who they run through. Obviously, you know who Kiki Rice is. I know you watched that TV show.
Yeah, the Hulu show.
Janiyah Barker off the bench is someone I'm interested in because she's been mocked to the Valkyries. She's a junior, but she turns 2022. She turns 22 in this draft year, so she's eligible to be drafted at 22 in this year's draft. Same with Lauren Betts, but it's unlikely, I think, that both of them are going to declare. So those three players that I just mentioned on UCLA, you know, ESPN does the guys top 100 for high school. Like, they do that for the girls side too. And Kiki Rice's and Lauren Betts' year, I think it was Lauren Betts number one for that class. Kiki Rice number two. And Lauren Betts went to Stanford, by the way. She went to Stanford with Cameron Brink and Kiki Irafen. And then it was Kiki Rice number two, and then Janiyah Barker number three. And now all three of them are on the same team at UCLA. So that's top three recruits from that year. And then Stanford, I'm not too familiar with who their top players are now. I haven't really been paying attention to them. They just lost to Cal, so they're not even like that good. They probably still have a really good record, but in comparison to like Tourney, you know, the March tournament, in comparison to all these other teams, I don't know how good they are. But I know they still have some players, like some top players, top high school recruits from when Brink and Irafen and Tara were there. So I'd have to do some research there, but I'm interested in the Ohio State freshman, number two in this year's high school class, with Sarah Strong up for UConn, number one. I think her name is pronounced Jelani Cambridge. I could be pronouncing that first name incorrectly, but Cambridge is the number two recruit. I think she had like a 30-something bomb in her first game, and she's been on everyone's radar, so I'm excited to see her play. But yeah, mostly UCLA and then her. And then I'll try to do some research on the Stanford players heading into the game.
Yeah, so we'll have some stuff up on our social channels from that event. I don't know a ton about either team, but I just think the event in of itself, is this the first one?
Believe so. I don't remember this last year.
Because this could be a great opportunity to create something that you can come back to. And so I'm hopeful that people go. Like I imagine the tickets are much cheaper than the Warriors, because I looked up Warriors and Suns, and it was like, yeah, you can't really get to the first level for under $300 a ticket.
What? So, yeah. This cruddy Warriors team with this. Oh my God.
But the Wizards, there was another game that in January that the tickets were a little bit less expensive, but still it's out of control. So I mean, this is a great opportunity. Like, Chase is awesome. Like, I love going to Chase, and you get to see a different product. So it'll be fun. But all right, let's finish with some around the NBA stuff, and then we'll get out of here. Giannis is back. The Bucks won the NBA Cup. Darvin Ham, I think, is the difference here in the NBA Cup. Back-to-back champion Darvin Ham. But I think people had thought that maybe Giannis was going to ask out of that place, and I don't think that's happening anytime soon.
No.
The Bucks are hot, and they won the NBA Cup. They beat the Thunder. And, you know, I think everyone was sort of ready to crown the Thunder, as this is the team. They got so much depth. And then their first opportunity to play a somewhat important game. Not that anyone is making any assumptions about teams because of the NBA Cup, but I was kind of disappointed in their performance. I was like, come on, man. Like, you guys are supposed to grow up here in front of our eyes, and it did not happen.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if that kind of same thing with Indiana last year too, right? Like, it was like, here's this up-and-coming team with this star Tyrese Halliburton. The game before had like the performance of his lifetime against the Boston Celtics to knock him out, and then he comes and plays the Lakers, and then just kind of disappearing act for that team. Kind of,
and the Pacers are like 12-15 right now too this year.
Mm-hmm. Like
they're not playing well at all.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, I still think the Thunder are really good.
They're awesome.
We know they're missing players, but they're still missing Chet. Still, they should have came out. I feel like if Boston was missing like a guy or two, they still would have came out and ran this thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, when the Bucks start off like 0-9 or something, yeah, I was pretty excited. I was like, I think Giannis is going to get traded here. But when they, return that with like a double-digit win streak, I don't know what it ended up getting
they
to. But
they have the same record as the Warriors right now. They're also 14-11.
Yeah. Yeah, but and when you start off that bad, the Warriors started off so good and now they're so bad. The Bucks started off so bad and now they're so good, and like the win column. So yeah, I think they're good.
What did you think about NBA Cup season 2?
I was less invested.
It just seems like a waste of time to me.
Yeah, it feels like we keep coming back to like, why should the players care? And I feel like that was our question in year one, and it's still our question in year two. And it's like, what are you going to do? It just feels like the NBA itself is like, I think there was some stat that the NBA was the only sport that like didn't like progress. I don't know from what the measure of progression was, whether that's like social media clicks or like revenue or something, but it like every single sport, MLB, NHL, WNBA and still basketball, but you know, the NBA was the team, it was the league that did not progress, where every other American sports league and whatever the measure was, I know I saw a post, and it kind of feels like the NBA isn't as popular right now.
I wonder if you could do the NBA Cup in the early rounds, because the early rounds are all part of the schedule. Like, even the knockout stuff is part of the schedule, part of your win-loss record. It's just when you go into those finals games and such, where it's just an extra game for the sake of being an extra game. I wonder if there's a way to do the NBA Cup. And I went back to this because I was talking about how opening night you could do the All-Star game, and because it's like the first time these guys are stepping on the court.
Yeah.
What if the NBA Cup started right when the season started, and you get through all of these games in like the first 2 weeks of the season, and then you don't have to do the Las Vegas thing, or you can do the Las Vegas thing, but you put it within the schedule. Like, you don't have all of the games set up so that it doesn't have to be an extra game. Like, why isn't the Bucks versus the Thunder, why isn't that just their, you know, one of their two games during the season? And because if you make every game a part of your regular schedule and a part of your win-loss record, then you do want to win those games. Because if you're the Warriors, you're like, oh man, we lost to the Rockets. And it's frustrating, not because we didn't get to go to the semifinals of the NBA Cup. It's frustrating because that counts in our win-loss record, and that counts for the playoffs. So I would like to see them make all of these games count for the regular season and not have these semi-exhibition games once you get to Vegas. And that's what I would do, because I think like it should hurt in some way to lose that final game. Like to the Thunder, they're like, oh, we lost. No biggie. Doesn't count. We're good. They don't even like count the stats in any way. Who cares? So I would try to figure out how to do something like that. And then I would give the winning and the losing team something. Whether the losing team locks into a play-in by losing that game, and maybe the winner at least locks in the sixth seed or something. Like, I would do something so that teams play for it, because otherwise, you know, it's part of your regular win and loss record, but these games are no more important than a normal regular season game otherwise. And I think that would be a way to make the cup more important, especially to win it, because the money, it doesn't matter. Like, Damian Lillard's like, oh yeah, like if I get that money, I'm going to give it to staff, like the people who help in the day-to-day. And that's awesome for him to do that. But like, what is James Harden going to do? Throw a party? I don't know. Maybe he will find a young player to give money to. But these guys are...
But no, I think what you're trying to say is like the money doesn't mean as much to these big stars. Therefore, it's like not as much of a, you know, make them play hard type of incentive.
Yeah. I mean, and look, there are going to be holes in every idea that you have, because it's like, oh, the Chicago Bulls have made this great run in the NBA Cup and they lose the finals, and thus they actually qualify for the, you know, for the play-in game. Like, the players themselves who are on the team at that point, you know, maybe that works for them, but at some point, some of those guys may be traded, and they're like, oh, what did I care? I got traded. Like, so there's going to be holes in everything. But anyways, I just thought the whole thing was, it's just all sort of meaningless to me in the big scheme. But I wanted to ask you one more thing, which is, we talked about this. I can't believe they actually put this thing into plan. This horrendous NBA All-Star Game idea.
I don't even think we should talk about it.
I'm so bothered by this. Like, more than probably anything else, but the reason is because I come from an age where the All-Star Game did mean something. The thing that we didn't have that is actually part of it is Barkley, Shaq, Kenny Smith are drafting the rosters from the pool of 24, and Candace Parker is called the GM of the Rising Stars. So I have no idea what any of that means.
It basically means, I mean, yeah, they can market it better or present it better, but it's, so the Rising Stars, they do this exact same thing the day before. So the winner of the four teams out of the Rising Stars then gets bumped up to play again. They become the fourth team to this NBA version of it.
But what does the GM do? She gets to pick the players already picked, I thought.
Yeah, so maybe I'm not understanding this thing.
No, I mean, I think you're right, but I just it just feels like what does a GM do if there's already a Rising Star? I'm sure we'll figure out more.
Let her have it, man. In the future. Just let her have it.
No. I wanted her to like pick instead of like Chuck, because you know what's gonna happen is
someone's gonna choose a terrible team.
Yeah, they're gonna pick bad teams.
That'd be kind of funny.
So
it's like, it's less funny because in the G League thing, they do this too, where there's 3-4 captains. And I think there's usually 3 because one captain is just the captain of the Ignite or the G. Okay, I'm saying this incorrectly. It's not the G League. People are probably going to be listening to this. It's not the G League. It's the Rising Stars. Mm-hmm. So there's usually 3 Rising Stars teams, a collective mm-hmm. of first year or second year players from teams that have been doing well that get selected for this thing. And the fourth team is usually the G League team. It is the best players from the G League and in previous years, including the Ignite's top stars. So this time around, there's no Ignite. I assume they're still going to be doing this G League thing. So then... Usually the captains are guys like kind of like legends that don't have the platform that Shaq, Chuck, and Kenny do. Who is it? I think there's been, I'm trying to think of who it was. Like Detlef Schrempf.
Oh wow.
Was one of them. I think he was one of the captains. it's like still notable names, but it's not as funny for them to pick a bad team as it is for Shaq, Kenny, and Chuck. It's because All I right. feel like Shaq, Kenny, and Chuck are almost integrated into like watching basketball experience. Like, yeah, we all like know that.
I mean, we saw the team captains, right? And what happens in the team captains is stuff like Jokic gets the second to last pick. Like stupid stuff like that happens. So I don't know. I just whatever.
I mean, that happened with the LeBron thing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Jokic jumped in front of, I forget who the last guy was. It was like a white guy.
It was Lowry.
Yeah. So, the other thing that I think is really dumb is these games are to 40 points. With the 3-pointer, you can get to 40 points in 8 minutes. Like, if they're already not going to be playing any defense in this game, these are going to be like 1-quarter games. And so that, like, it's not you go to 12 minutes or whatever. It's like, no, you first team to 40 wins. It's like 40? Like, we're going to be done so fast. Then everyone's just going to be shooting threes to get to 40 so they don't have to play anymore. Yeah. I think there's
what I will say
like
is
a handshake agreement where it's just like, all right, we're going to leave each other open. And if we hit, we hit. Like, don't guard me out here like that.
Yeah.
Silly.
They should. So I think in years past, what made the the former method work was just that they could F around for 3 quarters, just like how it's been, you know, since I've been watching the All-Star game, where it's like you F around for 3 quarters, but in the 4th quarter, you lock in because mm-hmm. the game is kind of close. And that hasn't been the case for the past 2 years. Yeah. It's been one team just absolutely goes nuts for the first 3 quarters that the losing team in the 4th quarter, it's just too big of a lead to try to close.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's never been fun, but maybe with this 40-point format, What I will say about the Ignite side, or not the Ignite side, the Rising Stars side, is that last year, the final game, I think it was the final game, because it was Matas Buzelis who hit the shot. That was kind of fun for 45 seconds, you know, where they're all digging in for the last shot, for the last point. And if they could just create something like that, just even for the smaller, like, we've just been so long without any competitiveness mm-hmm. in this game. Literally since, what, the Kyle Lowry's flopping in an All-Star game and AD hits the second free throw. Like, that has been like the last competitive one I feel like I've watched, just because all the other ones have been blowouts in the first 3 quarters and you can't come back from that lead. So I'm just wondering if they can create that with 40 points being a smaller target, so they know when it's getting out of hand more versus when you hit triple digits so quickly.
Yeah.
I think the idea is dumb, because I think, you know, in the Rising Stars version, like, it's not that entertaining. So it's like, let's take this failing idea, or just not great idea, and let's implement it with our top guy. Yeah, we'll see. But I think what we're all kind of looking for as basketball fans is just like that, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of competitiveness when we're watching these things. And they might be able to create that.
All right. Do you plan on trying to see any of that stuff in San Francisco and Oakland?
I bought a ticket to one event. It's called like the NBA, I think, is it called NBA Live? Where it's like they host something at like the like one of those auditorium centers. And I think they're just gonna have like brands and stuff,
mm-hmm.
brands like come through and you know, almost like a little convention center. I don't know. I'll see what it's like and report back. But yeah, I bought that ticket a while back because I was like looking at the Rising Stars tickets, looking at the All-Star Game tickets. They have concerts next to the Giant Stadium on one of the piers after every night, and there's actually like notable people going, but it's like, this is an insane ticket just to see like T-Pain. So everything's just insanely expensive. They're targeting, you know, the this is like a, I guess wealthy people can get here from, you know, where Steph lives, and then Silicon Valley.
What do you think about Thrive City? Thrive City is going to probably be really packed for those games, right?
I'm sure. Yeah, they probably will be, like, but I looked at it, but yeah, I'm not entirely sure what else.
I think we're going to go to one of the Ringer live shows at least.
True. At Punchline. We'll go to the Punchline one.
Yeah. All right. And maybe we'll tag along with some of the Ringer guys, see if they can get us
a credential. Please.
All right. That's the last show of the year. We'll be back in 2025 to do some more stuff with Warriors, and hopefully they turn it around, but also really going to be able to kind of cover the rise of the Valkyries. And if we get any audio from Ohema, if we get to talk to her, there's a little bit of a scrum thing going on before this Invisalign Classic. We'll post that on social media, probably YouTube short or Instagram reel, and probably some stuff from the games as well, if we get any good photos or videos from the game. So, all right, that is it from here. For Bri, I am Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.